In the 1970s, no-fault divorce laws gave a lot of people new freedom. They also brought with them new challenges, namely parenting through divorce. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Now, the children of divorce in the 70s and 80s are some of the husbands, wives, and parents of today. This hour, we'll talk about the evolution of divorce and how children of divorce are shaped by their experiences as they get married and divorced themselves. I'll talk with a divorced couple, family therapist David Drake, and mediator Annie Tucker. We also want to hear about your experiences this hour. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. In the 1970s, when no-fault divorce laws went into effect around the country, women and men had much greater freedom to leave an unhappy marriage. As the divorce rate rose, those husbands, wives, and parents were the first generation who really had to try to figure out how to parent through divorce. Now, their children are the husbands, wives, and parents of today. And when they find themselves facing divorce, many of them try to figure out how to learn from their own family experiences. This hour, we're going to talk about the evolution of divorce. I'll talk with a family therapist, a psychiatrist, and a mediator. And we'd love to hear your stories as well at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org if this is something that resonates with you. We're going to start the conversation this hour with a couple who has lived this story. With me are Becky and Jim Kopic, a now happily divorced couple from Ames. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Charity.
And Becky, I want to start with you. Your parents divorced when you were a child. When did you find out that they were separating?
I found out just a few weeks before my 10th birthday. So I was young.
Do you remember how you found out?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Well, it was a few weeks before my birthday, as I mentioned, and my mom was telling me, well, you're almost 10, you're too old for a birthday party, you know, I don't think you should have a birthday party this year. And I was, of course, fighting it because I was almost 10. And then one day my dad said, kids, I need to talk to you, come sit down on the couch. And so my brother and I went out there and I thought, oh my gosh, he's gonna tell me I can't have a party. And wondering why my brother was there for this conversation. And he sat us down and said, you know, things aren't working out. I'm moving into an apartment. And I thought, wow, so I still get my birthday party.
And the truth was your mom was trying to plan you a surprise party?
I believe so, yes.
That just didn't time out very well.
Not at all.
So how else did you respond? I mean, obviously you had the initial thought of, wait, how does this affect my birthday? But was this something that you saw coming?
I had no idea. My dad had worked nights, and so our family time was really only weekends and summer vacations. I didn't really see them interacting as a married couple, really. So it didn't occur to me that things were not good. This is just the way my family was. So I had no idea that this was coming.
Did you have friends whose parents were divorced?
At the time, I don't think I did. I may have and just didn't realize it.
Small town Minnesota.
Yeah.
So you were, it almost sounds like a little bit in shock.
You'd think so. It sort of came as a surprise, but I didn't really feel surprised. I remember after my dad told us this and he says, I'm sure you guys want some time to think. My brother and I each went back to our own rooms, and I remember walking into my closet of all things and just staring at the back of the closet wall thinking, I know I'm supposed to feel upset about this, but I don't really. I'm wondering why I didn't feel upset or angry or sad. It was an unusual reaction, I think.
So as you grew, did your dad stay in your life?
He did, yes. My family were all very close. We saw my dad every other weekend and every once every week. During the summer, we spent half of the summer with him and my stepmom and my brothers on that side. You know, he's been very involved in my life ever since. So he never left.
So it sounds like, would you say that you feel like your parents coped with it well?
They did. I think it took my mom a little while to kind of come to terms with it. But they, you know, they both attended my high school graduation and you know, they come to my son's birthday parties together. We still do things as a family, even though it's not the typical family that you might think of.
Well, and now you have a non-traditional family of your own. So let's fast forward to about 7 years ago. You guys were married, mm-hmm. and you had a two-year-old son, and you were facing divorce now. And Becky, did you think back to your experiences as a kid when suddenly you were facing this on your own?
In some ways, yes. I remember thinking, you know, if my mom could do this, I can do this. You know, I can raise a child on my own. And, you know, she did it with two of us. So, you know, it should have been twice as easy for me. Yes, I did think somewhat about, you know, those experiences. They did have some play in how I worked through our divorce.
Well, and it sounds to me like both of you approached this divorce differently than it would have been approached in the 1970s and differently from many couples today. Jim, what was your approach when you came to terms with the fact that this marriage wasn't going to work? You clearly wanted to do things a different way.
Yeah. Well, I was the last to come to terms with the fact that this marriage wasn't going to work. So, but at the beginning, there was some shock, right? I wasn't sure how I was operating in my personal life. I wasn't sure how things were working out between us or with our mutual friends or any of that. The one thing that I think was clear from the beginning was that both Becky and I were really interested in being co-parents, in making this work for our child. So from the beginning, I see Will about half time now. I saw him a little less while I was first getting settled into the apartment post-divorce. But from the beginning, we made sure that even though our schedules are a little wild, he gets to see each parent every day or two. We made sure that we all spend time together. It was a formal weekly event at the beginning.
So the three of you would spend time together, family time, every week while you were going through this divorce?
We would have a meal or go to the mall or go to the zoo or do something. Often because things were difficult between Becky and I at the time, we would make it sort of a neutral place like the zoo where there was plenty of space and people around us. But yeah, we would get together to let Will know that he had two parents who were both interested in keeping his family of origin, even if we couldn't keep our marriage.
Did you see a family therapist? Was there someone who helped you through this?
Well, the answers to those two questions are yes and no. We saw a family therapist, who did not help us, not the fault of the therapist. Therapy is not something you're given. It's something you participate in. And I'm not sure that we were at a point then that counseling could have been useful. So we went sort of out of a feeling of duty, but it didn't really amount to much.
Now, Becky, this family time every week, I want to get your take on it as well, because no matter how amiable a divorce could be, that sounds like it would have been really painful at times. Why did you stick through that?
For Will. I mean, there's no other reason for it. You know, if it hadn't been for Will, if we were just two people who got married and went our separate ways, we would have done just that. We would have gone our separate ways. But for Will, we couldn't do that. And he's just too important. It was too necessary, like Jim said, for us to show Will that we were still a family, even if we didn't live in the same house.
Jim, how long did it take before that family time got a little less complicated and started to be somewhat normal again?
You know, it's not like a switch that flips and all of a sudden it's okay. There's some things that are still not okay. I mean, I'm not as physically affectionate with Becky as I am with any of my other friends from way back. Just sort of gradually over time, it became less of a formal event, less of something that we had to put on for the sake of the child, and more of this is what we do. We're a family, and we hang out, and we're cool with it.
Jim, you are remarried.
Mm-hmm.
Becky, are you?
No, I'm not.
Jim, how has this affected your present relationship? Because Becky is still very much in your life.
Well, fortunately, I've married well twice. My new wife, my current wife, Jen, is one of Becky's best friends. At the beginning, it was weird for Jen, but she was willing to participate because she understood right from the start that Will was part of my life and doing what was right for him was going to happen in any relationship that I was in. She got to know Becky through this family time. Once Jen became part of Will's family, she became part of this big, extended, messy group of us. And they got to know each other. They got to become friends. Our wedding was at Becky's boyfriend's house. We all went to Hawaii together last summer. We're planning a road trip this summer. I think Jen and Becky are closer than Becky and I are a lot of the time right now.
Becky, what do you think you've gained from navigating this post-marriage relationship this way?
Well, certainly I've gained an amazing friend in Jen. You know, she and I have this huge common bond in Will, and I guess in Jim as well. And
common adversary.
And, yeah, we sometimes gang up on him a little bit. And, you know, I've got a family here, and, you know, my family's all in Minnesota, and I miss them terribly. One of my brothers is in Colorado, and my other brothers are, you know, just spread around. And so this is my core family here. This is what I've really gained through this is a home, a family to call my own wherever I am, because they're not getting away.
Well, and that can't be overstated. Jen, my current wife, and I have another son, Finn, and I don't think we could make it without a big, happy, extended family here.
Well, Jim and Becky, thank you both so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, Charity.
Becky and Jim Kopic, a happily divorced couple from Ames, Iowa, truly a modern divorce. We're going to continue our conversation about the evolution of divorce in just a moment. I'll talk with David Drake. He's a family and relationship psychiatrist in Des Moines, and also Annie Tucker, director of mediation services in Eastern Iowa. We'd love to hear from you as well. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and this hour we're talking about the evolution of divorce. Divorce became common in the 1970s and 80s with no-fault divorce laws around the nation, and now the children of those divorces are married and sometimes getting divorced themselves. This hour we're talking about how the approach to divorce has changed for a lot of people, and we'd love to hear your stories as well at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And with me now is David Drake. He's a family and relationship psychiatrist in private practice in Des Moines. He's also a clinical professor of psychiatry at Des Moines University. Hello, David.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being with me today.
Of course. Thank you.
And have you noticed over the years that the people who are coming to you for help during this kind of transition, have you noticed a change?
First of all, I want to say that Becky and Jim, I think, are remarkable individuals, and I really think they ought to write a book called Amicable Divorce. I mean, it's really, I think, incredible what they did and also what they continue to do on behalf of their son, but I think that's incredible. You know, I don't know if I've seen so much of a change. you know, one of the things I was thinking about is with adult offspring of parents who divorced, in some cases, they are less likely to want to put up with a marriage that isn't working. I do work with young adults, teenagers, who even tell their parents, geez, you know, I wish you would get divorced. This isn't working. It's an awful marriage. You know, why do you stay in this marriage? So I think it can work both ways with adults of parents who divorced who say they don't want this to happen to them. They want to stay together, at least for the children, things like that. But in some cases, they say, you know, boy, my parents had a lousy marriage. I don't want a lousy marriage, too.
When we use that phrase, staying together for the kids, my sense is that there has been research that has changed perspectives about that over time as well. There was an idea that no matter what, staying together is better for kids than getting a divorce. What does research show us now about that?
You know, I'm not sure about research, but when clinically and talking to people, when I ask people who are in troubled marriages about what keeps them together, there's several things. One is both parents wanting to be present in the home with small children who are growing up, wanting to be there. Another one is fear of the financial consequences if they divorce, which can be astronomical. A third one is fear of the unknown, that some couples would rather stay in a marriage where they are sometimes less than roommates than to face what might happen just if they leave this relationship which they are used to, good or bad.
Back in the 1970s and 80s, when the divorce rate was climbing, and it has in many ways remained pretty steady since then, but at that point, because it was somewhat new, the idea of going to a psychiatrist or another kind of therapist was also somewhat new. Do you think that that has become a more common part of seeking a divorce and getting through that transition?
Well, you know, I see lots of couples or individuals or couples who come to me who are just in trouble and they want something different. So it's not uncommon that I see sometimes just one member of a couple. I always encourage the other person to come in. But I tell them from the outset that I'm not there to save. I'm not there to break up their marriage. I'm there to help individuals and a couple clarify what it is they want to do, to find out what is best for them. But it's interesting, one of the times I see the greatest incidence of people coming to see me is when their last child is like a year away from leaving home. And sometimes they realize that they don't know who this person is that they live with anymore, their partner, their marital partner. And anxiety can be sky high about what their relationship will be like when that last child leaves home.
When somebody comes to you and they say, my marriage is in trouble, what is your approach? How do you start?
I start by, first of all, trying to clarify with them if this is a relationship they want to work on. Some people aren't clear about that, and they use the time initially to get clarity on that. Many times it's by themselves. I may see the other person as well. It comes in by themselves, and after a few times, if they're both game for it, see them together.
Do you find that people are, especially if somebody has decided this is not a relationship that I want to work on, do you find that people are willing to come in together after that point?
That is not very common in my experience. I did have one couple that was, I think, highly unusual, who, when they came to see me, they were separated, and they decided they wanted to work on the relationship while they were separated, which some couples can work quite well, allows things to kind of chill out. And they continued to work on the relationship and came back together and went back living together and continued as a married couple. But I think that was highly unusual.
Do you find that if the person who is talking to you, who's having a difficult time in their marriage, is a child of divorce, is that something that comes up again and again in their thoughts?
It's something, when I first see somebody, I do a family diagram, so I get a sense of what's going on in the broader family with their parents and even their grandparents, and sometimes we'll see a real pattern of divorce. And that's something that we end up talking about. And sometimes they are the first couple in through multiple generations that has been divorced, and that's kind of an extra problem as well with pressure sometimes to stay in a relationship that just isn't working and in some cases can't work. And in some cases, things have gone on for so long without having been worked on or talked about. I think that in some cases people can't go back and work on things, and it's not solvable.
We're talking about the evolution of divorce this hour, and with me right now is David Drake, a family and relationship psychiatrist in private practice in Des Moines, although he's on the line with us from North Carolina today because he couldn't fly back into Des Moines yesterday. So thank you for adjusting for us today. And we'd love to hear from you as well, your thoughts, your experiences at 866-780-9100. Alyssa is on the line from Waterloo. Hi, Alyssa.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I am a child of a divorced family. They divorced when I was 2 years old, and my brother was actually 6 months. So it's been pretty much all my life that I've known this as my family dynamic, I guess. My parents' divorce wasn't the best divorce. Obviously, your couple that you had on your show are really, it's a really great example of what to do if you're in a divorce, but I turned out okay, so I think my parents did an okay job, and my brother is fine, too. But I think the thing that I gained from my parents is that I'm going into my relationship in the marriage with an open mind, and, I mean, I'm being optimistic, but I have a more realistic outlook on what a marriage can do to a couple. And like I said, I turned out okay, but I think that my parents gave me a more... I guess they gave me the ability to see past all the romance and be more realistic and, you know, try and work on the marriage in that kind of way. So,
well, Alyssa, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts today.
Yeah, thank you.
And again, you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. And David, is that's such an interesting thing that Alyssa was saying. And of course, a lot of people do see counselors before they enter into a marriage. There are people who will marry you who require that you have some counseling
yes.
sessions or some classes. But
yep.
that forethought before entering into a relationship, that seems like something that could help in many ways.
You know, I'm curious. I don't know the research on that. I'd be curious to see if couples who've gone through that have a lower divorce rate. That would be very interesting research. But I think it makes sense, I think, for couples also to meet with their priest, their rabbi, their minister, their imam, I think makes sense, just to get a sense of, just to be asked questions and look at things. I think most of us, including myself, went into marriage somewhat starry-eyed, although my wife and I, we've been married now for, it'll be 27 years next month. I can't believe it. But, you know, we lived together for 2 years, which is common for lots of couples, and got married. So we knew each other, I think, pretty well at that time. But still, as I tell couples, I think my long marriage has taught me to be humble, that marriage is difficult, raising kids is difficult, and for anyone and everyone. And I think the more support that any of us have with family connections, with friends, that those are vital. The more isolated couples are away from connections with family or friends, I think the greater potential there is for the marriage to dissolve under times of stress, which we all go through.
I want to bring someone else into the conversation now. Annie Tucker is a director of mediation services in Eastern Iowa, in Iowa City. Hello, Annie.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today. And you, of course, spend a lot of time with couples who are going through divorces as being involved in mediation. For people who have not ever gone through mediation, first, can you describe exactly what it is?
Well, mediation is a chance for the couple to sit down, divorce mediation, to sit down together with a neutral person whose role is really to help them have a useful conversation, a conversation that they haven't been able to have together.
All right. And you can facilitate that conversation by what kind of framework do you set up so that people who maybe weren't able to talk to each other can talk to each other?
Well, that's a really good point. Actually, mediators have to talk to both parties separately before they come together for reasons that we can talk about later. But one of the things I like to do is let people know that even if they're court-ordered to mediation, which they are in different parts of the state, like in Southeast Iowa, Iowa City, Cedar Rapids area, Des Moines area, over by Council Bluffs in that part of the state, they're ordered to mediation. But once they get there, what they do is optional. So they could leave right away. But I say to them, I bet there are some things that you want the other person to understand. I bet there are some questions that you might have. I bet there are some things that are important to you about the decisions you have to make that you want them to understand. And that's what keeps people in the room talking about what's important, what they finally want to be heard on.
What are some of the issues that are the most common hot button issues when couples come to mediation?
Well, for couples with kids, it's the parenting schedule. You know, both parents usually want to have 24/7 with their kids. And if you're in two different homes, that's not going to happen. So it's a big change. And people have opinions about each other's parenting and about the time they've spent. And that can be a really tough conversation.
How can you help people through that?
You know, there's something that I learned to do that can be very helpful. I ask them to imagine, and I project out a time when the youngest would have graduated from college. I say, so picture 18 years from now, and Sammy is graduating from college, and the other kids are there, and both of you are there too. And at the end of the ceremony, Sammy says, you know, we want to go, the other kids and I want to go out to coffee with you and talk with you before we go to the family parties that everybody's scheduled for me. And so the thing is, Sammy's a grown-up, I say. Sammy knows what kind of latte she wants, right? So you sit down and talk, and Sammy says, you know, things could have been really terrible for us. They were really rocky for a while there. But I feel good about myself. Look, I've graduated from college. I've got a job set up. You know, Joey is married and has a little kid, and there he's doing fine. And we wanted to sit down and thank you for what you did, because we're okay. We feel good about ourselves. And that wasn't a given. So thank you for... And then I look at the parents and say, what will your kids thank you for at that point? What will make a difference between now and that day? And that frames it a lot more differently than just the hostility, the betrayal, the anger, the fear that's going on. It's like, let's look to a day that we both want to have happen, and let's see how to get there.
With court-ordered mediation in the area that you practice, can you clue us in? Do you see any changes or trends in how people are approaching divorce?
Oh, interesting. Some of the trends are related to the structure that the court has provided. It used to be that people didn't have to go to mediation until they needed a court date. And so people would go to mediation after they'd had a pretty contentious couple of years and all their friends and family had chosen up sides and communication had completely broken down. Now, a few years ago, the court changed that because research says that when people sit down and begin talking and trying to make decisions together about their divorce, if they do that early, if they just begin early, they're way more likely to be able to make their own decisions and rely less on the court. So the court changed the requirement and people are coming in earlier. And if they just begin talking about things such as, so who's going to do the carpooling now that we're in two different houses? You know, I don't want to do all the carpooling anyway, so those kinds of questions, when they begin to hammer those out initially, it can set the stage for them being able to make some of the more difficult conversations, difficult discussions.
Now, as you mentioned, of course, mediation is court-ordered in some places, but also some people just come to you for mediation of their own volition. What is it that you think causes people who are not court-ordered to go to mediation to seek out a mediator?
They want to make their own decisions. They recognize that they know more about their situation than the court does. And interestingly enough, the mediators have to, as I said, talk with parties before they come to mediation, talk with them separately. When I talk to folks, really 90 to 95% of them really doubt that there's going to be anything useful come of coming to mediation, sitting down and talking together, because things there's no communication, or they can't talk because it just accelerates right away. So I know that doubt is common and they don't believe that it's going to be able to work, but they come to mediation and know that they want to be able to make their own decisions And that's the key driving issue.
Now, in some relationships, when a marriage is breaking up, there are, I mean, there are always serious issues, but sometimes there are issues of abuse or issues that may make one partner in the couple feel unsafe being in the company of the other person. How do you deal with that in mediation?
That's a great question, because actually the research that we look at indicates that maybe 25% of the relationships or of the calls I get will be a situation where there is either controlling behavior or abusive behavior, mentally, emotionally, physically, sexually abusive behavior. So that's one of the purposes of talking with people ahead of time separately, to find out, is someone comfortable being in the same room with the other person? Do they feel able to speak up or not? Are they concerned that if they do speak up or speak honestly, might they be harmed later? So we have to figure that out. And it may be that mediation is completely inappropriate. It may be that simply making some changes, like letting folks bring in their attorneys there, so so it's not just that private, polarized conversation. There is some safety there, or some emotional safety there. It may be that talking on the phone and having a phone mediation works for them.
We'll continue our conversation in a moment. We're talking this hour about the evolution of divorce. With me, Annie Tucker, Director of Mediation Services in Eastern Iowa, and David Drake, a family and relationship psychiatrist in private practice in Des Moines. And when we get back from the break, we'll also be taking your calls. We want to hear your stories, your insights, your questions. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the evolution of divorce, and with me is David Drake. He's a family and relationship psychiatrist in private practice in Des Moines and a clinical professor of psychiatry at Des Moines University. Annie Tucker is also here. She's director of mediation services in Eastern Iowa, and we want to hear from you. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Particularly if you are a child of divorce who has faced a divorce yourself, we'd love to hear your story. Or if you're a child of divorce, how did that change your perspective as you entered into marriage? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Again, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Barb is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Barb.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, first I want to compliment the Ms. Tucker on her emphasis on the question of what will the kids thank you for in the future. I just think that for people who are divorcing who have children, that focusing on those children is the most important thing. I went through a divorce, I'm trying to think now how many years ago. It was 1991. And my husband and I had been together for 20 years and didn't have kids until probably 8 years into the marriage. And when we did decide to get a divorce, we decided to focus on the kids and make sure that we did not harm each other's relationship with the kids. We actually had something in writing in our divorce decree that said we would not do anything to undermine those relationships. And we constantly emphasized to the kids that this was not about them and it had nothing to do with them. This was something between the two of us. And we had both joint legal and physical custody of the kids and shared that time. And I'm not saying it was always easy. Sometimes I bit my tongue, and I'm sure he did too. But we continued to get together, as one of your earlier callers talked about, for birthdays and school events and eventually for holidays, not in the beginning, but we worked that through. And now we are, not best friends, but we are friendly and are able to do things together. I have remarried, and he's been with a longtime partner. They attended our wedding. And I just, I'm happy with how things have turned out, and I think my kids are too.
Well, Barb, thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
Thank you.
It sounds like you've done a tremendous job. And David, I want to turn to you because, Barb mentions that she believes that the most important thing is focusing on the kids. And, of course, we also have to take care of ourselves as well. How do you help people navigate that territory?
Well, you know, focusing on the kids, I think, is important. And as one of your earlier callers mentioned, I think it's entirely, it was Becky and Jim, it would be entirely different if they didn't have children. They could have just gone their separate ways. But one of the things I relay to people is that when they have children is that they're going to be in each other's lives for the rest of their lives, at graduations, at PTA meetings, at parent-teacher meetings, at, you know, plays and concerts and all those kinds of things. But I think, you know, going through a divorce, I think, is somewhat like being hit by a Mack truck. And I think for people to realize that about focusing on eating well and getting good sleep, on stress management, relaxation therapy, you know, getting counseling for themselves potentially if they need that, or again, consulting with their clergy member or friends or family, I think is paramount. But getting back in touch with their social connections if they haven't been in touch with them, I think is paramount and very important.
Well, and Annie, you know, there are some people who would listen to that and say, well, if the focus is on the kids, then you should just stay married. And so you have looked into research about how marriages that are unhappy affect kids and how divorce affects kids. What do we know about that?
Well, what I do know is that Dr. Constance Ahrens wrote a book called The Good Divorce. And she was getting a divorce, and so she felt like she was on a need-to-know basis about what her kids needed to be, quote-unquote, okay out of all this. And so she did longitudinal research on kids whose parents had divorced, and she found that there were two things that kids she determined were okay had in common. And one was that they didn't lose the relationships that were important to them before the divorce. You know, whether it was the old lady next door who was like really close with the little children, whatever it was, they didn't lose those people, and they didn't live in a war zone. So their parents were making an effort, whether it was simply being civil or it was even living out that they are still a family but in two households, you know, and they have parents who are not married.
Well, and
whatever
as Barb was saying, that both she and her ex-husband probably bit their tongues at times, but not saying nasty things about your ex-spouse in front of the kids.
Exactly. So that would be consistent with what she found makes a difference for kids.
All right. Let's get back to the phones. Kevin is on the line from Burlington at 866-780-9100. Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I am what I call, and I've just recently kind of figured out, I'm disposable marriage, I think. My father was divorced four times. My mother was divorced four times. I've been divorced three times. I'm on my fourth marriage, and up until pretty close, we've been talking about divorce. So part of my question is that common from the father to the mother to just see it as that way? And now that I know that, me and my wife currently have worked, I'm trying to work harder on keeping this marriage. You know, we're starting to look at like Gary Chapman's books on love languages and different things. But I mean, she told me just recently that I probably brought up divorce 100 times in the first 5 years of our marriage, because until I started seeing it, I never thought about working on it. My parents just got divorced. When things got tough, it didn't work, you got divorced. So is that common? And what can I do knowing this now to help me prevent? Because I don't want to be divorced again.
David, can you respond to Kevin?
Just some thoughts on that. You know, first of all, I don't think marriage is for everybody. And one of the factors to take into account, I mean, for some couples, marriage is a religious event. It certainly is a joint business venture, and you certainly find that out when you go through, you know, dividing up assets. That's something to consider. But one of the statistics, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I am aware that with each subsequent marriage, the divorce rate is higher. Again, marriage is not for everybody. Sometimes I'll meet some people that perhaps don't have kids or they've raised their kids, and they're in a long-term relationship, and I'll ask them, you know, why are you thinking about marriage? What are your thoughts on that? And for many people, that's embodies all sorts of things. But marriage is not for everybody. And just because somebody is in a long-term relationship, I don't think means necessarily they should pursue marriage.
Well, and to Kevin's question also, I think all of us know that marriage is hard work and can be hard work.
Definitely.
Is there is there something that happens when somebody has been through all of these divorces from through their parents and in their own experience? Is there a problem that is created because it's too easy to think about escaping from that hard work and from that marriage?
Well, you know, the thing that comes to my mind in that vein, when I work with couples who are divorcing or thinking about it or have been divorced before, is what did you learn about yourself in this marriage? Because typically when I'm working with couples who are divorcing, if their partner is there or not in the room, is I will ask them about their part in the marriage not working out. Because typically people, all of us are very good at pointing out the problems and diagnosing the other person. And many times I will hear people who actually give a mental health diagnosis of their partner. You know, their borderline personality, their this or that or whatever it is. But what did they learn about themselves in the divorce? What was their part in it not working out as far as the marriage? I think if people haven't dealt with that, they go on to another marriage, the problems can be replicated.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for your call. And Haley is on the line next. Hello, Haley.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I was just thinking about how my parents stayed together in a very unhappy marriage because of the kids and ended up getting divorced after my youngest sister graduated high school. That was about 10 years ago. And how them staying together unhappily without any therapy or anything like that, I certainly didn't do us any favors. And then I was the first to have children, and them as grandparents now, they've sort of put away aside their differences in order to celebrate all holidays together with us as a family, and that has helped. But them staying together for us as children was not beneficial to us that I see. And just speaking about how watching your parents get divorced makes it easier to make that decision. That maybe, I'm not sure, but now being married, sometimes I think when my husband and I aren't getting along, it would be better if we just split up so I wouldn't have that terrible, you know, long-term life just to stay together for the children. Of course, we're not at that point at all, but sometimes I think that.
It almost plants a seed there in your mind.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to stay together just because you have kids or just because you have financial responsibilities and be unhappy for that many years.
David, can you respond to Haley?
Well, you know, I think one thing to consider is that divorce is a totally new trajectory. You know, it perhaps resolves some issues, but it certainly brings up some new ones. I think for a person to be able to look at the whole picture is important. I definitely recommend for someone in Haley's position to consider getting, again, consulting with someone, again, clergy or a couples consultant that could work with her, possibly with her husband, just to clarify where things are. What I tell people in my practice is that I try to provide a time and a place where people can look at where they've been, where they are now, where they're trying to get to, and what's getting in the way. But again, marriage is a difficult, sometimes joy-filled and enriching experience. It's a great way to learn about oneself, one's own rough edges and all that stuff, but it is a difficult process to commit oneself to.
We've been talking a lot about co-parenting and how that's a very good thing if it's possible, but Annie, at times that's not possible and maybe wouldn't be a good thing, right?
That's possible. There are people who choose to minimize that, or you know, stay involved in various ways. Kids have cell phones, so sometimes it's an issue. Can I, rather than negotiating the family landline like used to be an issue, now it's can I just call directly our children on their phones? So some are staying in touch, but there are situations where there is an abusive parent, and it feels safer, and the kids are more interested in not being involved with that parent at this time.
David, do you want to add anything on that?
No, I think that makes sense, yeah.
All right, we are nearly out of time, and of course, on a program like this, I mean, we're trying to explore how divorce has changed, but also I think that people also, if they're faced with that, they are looking for a little bit of advice. So, David, if someone is at that point where they're thinking that their marriage may end or has decided that they need to end their marriage, what would you suggest to someone to figure out how to navigate this transition?
Well, I think consulting with someone who can be objective and neutral, and that's a lot of what I hear from Anne about her work. Consult with someone who can be objective and neutral, who doesn't have a stake in the outcome, many times they can be a family therapist, consultant, a clergy person, good close friend, family member, I think can be a good place to start, because it is a huge thing to stay in the marriage. It is certainly, as I said, a new trajectory to get out of the marriage and pursue divorce.
We have had a few people calling in this hour. We haven't been able to get them on the air, but saying that they don't feel that there are enough incentives in Iowa for people to stay married. And the threshold for divorce is not high now. Of course, that has allowed a lot of people to leave bad marriages that couldn't get out of bad marriages before. But do you think that maybe in some ways it's too easy?
Well, I don't think the consequences of divorce are easy at all. And I think that, again, some people need to get divorced. It can be a dangerous situation that's gone on for a long time. But the financial and sometimes social consequences can be immense. So maybe the legally getting divorced, but what happens on the other side is significant.
And the repercussions last forever.
Yes, indeed.
Dr. David Drake, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity.
David Drake is a family and relationship psychiatrist in private practice in Des Moines. He's also a clinical professor of psychiatry at Des Moines University. Annie Tucker, now, of course, you provide mediation services, so clearly you're in favor of mediation. But do you have a piece of wisdom that you could offer to someone who is at that point where they are thinking about trying to leave a relationship?
Well, my advice would be similar to David's. And sometimes I see people who have not filed for divorce, and they come in beginning to talk about it and begin to be thinking about the concrete ways things will change. And in some cases, and their feelings about it, and their, you know, and what's in the way. And sometimes people decide that they'll just stay together or they're not going to rush into it. And sometimes they decide that they're going to go to therapy. That's one thing they decide in mediation. So I think what David suggested, whoever you go to take some time to think it through and to be someplace where you can actually talk together without getting in your usual patterns of fighting together, can be really important.
Annie, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Annie Tucker is the Director of Mediation Services in Eastern Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Sarah Bowden, Ben Stanton, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Technical support today from Alyssa Weiss in Ames. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at our website, iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime. We'd love to hear your comments on things that you've heard on the show, suggestions for things you'd like to hear on the show. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, Jim Pease will be here. We'll talk about signs and songs of spring. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.